And you can open your Bibles this morning to 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel 17. In the days of Israel's history, the Bible tells us that even before the flood that judged the world of its sinful ways, there were giants in the land in those days. And, you know, we have some pretty big guys that play basketball. And, you know, we think, man, you know, a 7-footer, maybe 7'1", 7'2", is huge. We think, man, that guy's a giant. But the guys that are on the basketball court, you know, the Shaquille O'Neals and these guys that are these big, huge, monstrous-looking men, they would be pipsqueaks compared to the guy we're going to talk about today. In the days of Israel's history, the giants that lived in those days were really big. The Bible tells us that Goliath, this champion of the Philistines, his height was about 9 feet 9 inches, maybe more, depending on how you measure a cubit and a span, depending on whose arm you're using. A cubit was generally about 18 inches. A man would measure a cubit by the tip of his finger up to his elbow. And so depending on how big the guy was, it could be anywhere from 18 to 20 inches. And a span was generally how far you could spread your thumb to your baby finger. Could be 6 inches if you're little. Could be 9 or 10 if you're a big guy. But at the very least, Goliath was 9 foot something. And could have been as much as 10 foot something. Big guy. Big man. And what I want you to understand this morning as we get into this really interesting chapter, which has almost always been relegated as a kid's story. You know, the story of David and Goliath. Who didn't like that when they were a kid? You know, it was one of my favorite Sunday school stories. You know, you always wanted to be like David, you know. Taking on the giant. Did anybody want to be the giant when they were a kid? I didn't, because of what happens to him, you know. But here's the thing. This story really took place. This is a real event with real application for us today. It taught the children of Israel a lesson. It certainly taught the Philistines a lesson. But for you and me, there's some things here that are very, very important. So I'm going to just ask you to tune in, kind of be extra sharp today. There's some real important things that we need to discuss in this particular story. And what it's going to require is going through this, in a sense, a couple of times. We'll go through it as quickly as we can here to give you the layout of what takes place. But then we need to retrace some steps and see some other elements of this story that are really amazing. So, verse 1, the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle, and were gathered together at Shochoh, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shochoh and Azekah in Apheph's Damon. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other. And there was a valley between them. When we were in Israel, we went to this valley, the Valley of Elah. We'll go there again when we go this coming year. The Valley of Elah, there's a little hillside on one end of it, and on the other end, there's another hillside. And the children of Israel were all kind of gathered on one hill and the Philistines on the other, and down in the valley there was a brook, and it's still there, amazingly. And the brook, of course, as we'll find out, is where David gathers his five stones to come up against the giant. But there in that valley, this little plain, they have gathered on the hills around it, and that valley would be the battleground. And so there they stood. Not a huge place in your mind's eye, just kind of envision, you know, not really mountains, so to speak, but hills and a valley in between. And not that big, really. Not a big valley, you know, but a rather small one. And so it says there, there went out from the camp of the Philistines, verse 4, a champion. In other words, their baddest dude, their biggest boy, their mean honcho, the champion of the Philistines, comes out of their camp, named Goliath of Gath, whose height, again, was 6 cubits and a span. This huge man comes out into the middle of that valley and starts kind of strutting his stuff. You know, if you were 9'9" or above, you'd probably be out there just kind of looking at those men of Israel. You know, none of them, you know, would be even close to you in stature. And there he goes out there just kind of saying, yeah, that's right, I'm bad. That's it. As he just stares him down, you know, this big, huge guy. He had a helmet of brass on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. Now, mail is that armor that looks like it's scaly. You know what I'm talking about? They used to wear it in ancient times. It looks like scales almost, but it's made of armor and heavy, as we'll see. His coat of mail was 5,000 shekels of brass, or minimally 125 pounds. Just his vest. I mean, you know, you put on a backpack and try and move around, you know, if it's 50 pounds, you're going to be working, right? Extra hard. Try 125 pounds. Just your vest weighs that. So this guy was big and strong, and he had greaves of brass upon his legs and a target of brass between his shoulders. Who knows what those things weighed, but this guy's outfit was heavy. He was a heavyweight. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spearhead weighed 600 shekels of iron, or between 15 and 20 pounds just for the tip of his spear. That's a heavy spear, don't you think? I mean, that's something this guy would just chuck at somebody. Have you ever tried to throw something that weighs about 20 pounds? It doesn't go very far, at least when I throw it, you know. Because, you know, a shot put weighs about 16 pounds, you know. You ever picked up one of those? I mean, take a bowling ball, a 15, 16-pound bowling ball, and see how far you can throw it. So the weight of this spearhead was about 20 pounds. And he would hurl that thing at his enemy. You wouldn't want to get hit by it. Now, he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and you servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. So the challenge is on. Goliath says, what are you guys in an array for, ready for battle? Why don't you just send down one guy, and I'll take him on, and we'll just settle it that way. Why get everybody involved? Huh. And he says, if he be able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall he be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. Give me a man, just one guy that's a worthy opponent. And when Saul and all of Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. They're shaken in their boots. They are knocking their knees together in fear just looking at this man and hearing his challenge. Now, when Saul and all Israel heard this thing, they were greatly afraid. And David, verse 12, was the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had eight sons. And the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. So Jesse's getting old. He has eight sons. And the three eldest sons, verse 13, went and followed Saul to the battle. And the names of his three sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and next unto him, Abinadab, and the third, Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the three eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his sheep at Bethlehem. Remember, David used to go and play his harp and sing songs to soothe Saul because Saul had an evil spirit troubling him. And he went back to feed the sheep in between going and nursing Saul, you know. And the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. So for 40 days this is going on. Every day Goliath comes out, gives the challenge. Nobody takes him up on it. You see, this goes on day after day. And Jesse said unto David his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their thousand, and look how they thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. See how your brothers are doing. Now Saul and they that are all the men of Israel that are there were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. They weren't really fighting. They were set in array, as it says. They were prepared, but no fighting was going on because no one's taken the challenge of Goliath yet. And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to fight and shouted for the battle. They're getting ready to set themselves in array again. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. So there they are again, day after day, set up for battle, but nobody doing any fighting. It's just for show. It's kind of saying, well, we're ready, you know, and the other guys are saying, well, we're ready too, you know. But nobody's doing anything. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. Comes and says hi to his brothers, you know. As he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath. So David gets there just in time for the daily challenge. He gets there, and right when he says hi to his brothers and starts to chat with them for a bit, all of a sudden here comes Goliath out of the armies of the Philistines and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. He says the same thing every day. He goes out there and says, bark, 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 bark. As he struts across the plain like a rooster, you know, and calls them all chickens and cowards and, you know, come on, send a man out here, you know, if you got one. And so he's chanting the same thing as he did before. And David listens to him. David hears what he has to say. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. So now nothing's happened, but all the men that are even arrayed there in battle, they see Goliath come out into the middle of the plain again, and they run away. They just turn tail and run, take off. They're afraid. They're scared. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man, speaking to David, that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men. So David's interest is piqued that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach of Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? So little David, probably 16, 17 years old, he hears what Goliath says and then hears what the men are saying. The army of Israel saying, man, have you seen this guy? Man, he's huge. and he's bad news, and he keeps taunting us and challenging us. Every single day he's doing this. And David says, really? And what does the guy get that takes him out? Who does he think he is? David says. Who does this guy think he is? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killed him, repeats what has already been said. You're going to get riches. Your father's household is going to be free. And you get the king's daughter. You get a bride. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spoke unto the men, and his anger was kindled against David. And he said, why comest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and thy naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. His older brother, the oldest brother, looks at David, and David's asking these questions about Goliath and what the man gets that defeats him and all the rest. And the older brother says, what are you doing here? Like you're going to do anything, you know, like other older brothers do that, you know. What are you doing here, pipsqueak, you know? Go home. Who's tending the sheep? You know, kind of taunting him. You know how that works with sibling. He says, you came down to watch the battle. Go home. And David said, what have I done now? Can you just hear that? I mean, it's just like two brothers, right? The older brother says, what are you doing here, David? Go home. Who's tending the sheep? Go home. Get back to what you're supposed to be doing. Leave the fighting to us men. And David looks at his brother and says, now what have I done? What have I done now? And then he says this, is there not a cause? Isn't there a reason, perhaps, for me to be here? Isn't there some reason? Because obviously, and David didn't say so, but he's thinking it. Isn't there a reason I should be here? Because nobody else is fighting this guy. Nobody else is going to take him on, you see. And he turned from him toward another. He just turns away from his brother and says, well, fine. I won't talk to you about this anymore. And he spake to another after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. So they talk about it again. They talk about the whole situation one more time, same thing. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. So David is acting rather boldly in saying, who does this guy think he is? Well, nobody else is saying that. Everybody else is just scared to death. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with the Philistine. Be afraid of this guy. I'll go fight him, David says. And Saul says to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. You're not going to be able to take him on. Are you kidding me? This guy's a man of war. Has been since he was just a little guy. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both lion and bear. Of this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. I was out there tending the sheep, David said, and a lion and a bear tried to take on some of the sheep and take them from the flock. And he says, I went after them. And I killed them. Now that really happened too. And that's quite a thing, isn't it? A teenage boy takes on a lion and a bear that are taking his sheep? Interesting. Keep all these things in mind. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, will he deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine? And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. You can kind of hear Saul's tone there. Okay, go ahead, and may God be with you, because, man, you're going to need it. Right? He thinks he's a goner. I mean, you foolish young boy, go ahead. You know, man. And Saul armed David with his armor and put a helmet of brass upon his head and also armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor. And he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off from him. So you can imagine Saul, remember, was a man in Israel that's head and shoulders above all the rest. It means he was a big guy. Saul was tall, a big, big man. David's a 17-year-old teenager, you know. And Saul puts his clothes on him and his armor and all the rest, and looks like, you know, the sleeves are down to his knees, you know, and he's like a little boy wearing his dad's suit, you know. It doesn't fit. Everything's too big, and he sits there and goes, man, I'll never be able to do anything in this thing, right? I can't even move. This is all heavy and cumbersome. So he takes them off, puts them off. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in a scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. So Goliath has a man right in front of him with a shield, and in these days he'd have a man behind him with a shield. So Goliath has a front man and a rear guy, someone covering behind and someone in front of him. And that's the way he was parading out there. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of fair countenance. Here's this little guy running out there. He's just a kid, you know, and Goliath disdains him. He's embittered because this kid's even out there. And you can imagine Goliath feeling like, what kind of an army is this? I mean, I asked for a man to come out here to fight me, you know, and he's expecting at least someone as big as Saul. I mean, at least send your big guy out. You know, he won't be big next to me, but he's bigger than this little runt. And he's just kind of, you know, rolling his eyes and saying, oh, brother, is this all you got? And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? You got that shepherd's stick in your hand? What am I, a dog? What, are you going to hit me with your stick? You're going to treat me like one of the wolves that is trying to take your flock, you little shepherd boy? You see. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and the beasts of the field. And then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. And this day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thy head from thee. And I will give thy carcass of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Wow. David says, really? You're going to take me down, are you? Well, I'll show you. You come to me with your sword and your shields and all your stuff, but I come to you in the name of the Lord, and you're going down. I love this. And all this assembly, David says, shall know that the Lord saith not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hastened and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. So Goliath starts taking these monstrous steps, you know, boom, boom, boom. The ground is trembling. It's, you know, like Jurassic Park. These huge steps of the giant, you know. And David takes off and runs right towards him. You know, he doesn't have any armor on or anything, just his little shepherd's clothes on, you know, and he runs right towards him. And David put his hand in his bag while he's on the run, you see, and took thence a stone and slung it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until they had come to the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way of Shaaraim, even unto Gath and unto Ekron. And the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines, and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it into Jerusalem. But he put his armor in his tent. And when Saul saw that David went up against the Philistine, he said unto Abner, the captain of his host, "Abner," he says, "whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As thy soul liveth, O king, I cannot tell." Now, interesting, Saul, even though David was the man that came and ministered to him with playing the harp, while Saul had that troubling spirit, remember, Saul didn't pay much attention to David during that time. And now that he sees David out there taking on the Philistine, he says, "Who is that?" And the king inquires again, "Whose son is this stripling? You know, who, where did this guy come from?" As David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. Can you imagine that? He's just got Goliath's hair in his head, in his hand. Just kind of taken like a bowling ball with some netting around it or something. Sick. And he's just been carrying that thing around with him. And he brings it before Saul. And it must have been a big head, too. I mean, how big is a guy's head that's 9'9" or whatever? Big, you know. So he brings it with his head in hand. And Saul said unto him, "Whose son art thou, thou young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of thy servant Jesse the Bethlehemite." Now, intriguing story, don't you think? But what does it mean for you and me? Well, there's a few things I want you to take note of as we walk through this, just for a few minutes. And just please pay attention to some of the things that we're going to talk about, because they're really important. First of all, you have to understand the place that this took place. It says there in verse 1, Ephes Damon, which literally means boundary of blood. The place where this all took place was the boundary of blood. And it happened in the Valley of Elah. In the Valley of Elah, Elah means the mighty one. So we have the mighty one meeting in the boundary of blood against who? Goliath. And his name means exile. And what you need to know in this story, guys, is so intriguing. We have here a picture, of course, David, the son of David, being Jesus Christ, who David typifies, who he pictures so often in the scriptures, is here in this story. Goliath is the enemy, the perpetual enemy, the Philistines were, of Israel, of God's people. He is the enemy today of God's people. The enemy, Satan, of course. He's the big head hog at the trough. He's the big honcho, the big mean guy of the enemy, who's constantly trying to keep you and me in what? Exile. Goliath's name is exile. He is in exile. Satan is in exile. He was cast out, you see, from heaven. He was removed from that place as the head cherub or the chief cherub. He was cast out because of his pride, his arrogance, and he is in exile, and he wants everyone else to be in exile as well. So here it happens in this place, the mighty one, the man in exile, in the place, the boundary of blood. It's all about the blood, isn't it? And watch this now. Goliath, we know that his symbolic meaning is more than just being a giant of the Philistines. But isn't it interesting that his height is 6 cubits? 6, of course, is the number of man. It's interesting that he has 6 pieces of armor he's wearing, if you count them up. And isn't it interesting that his spear, his weapon, weighed 600 shekels? Now, you don't have to be a mathematician to put 666 together, which is what Goliath pictures. The giants in this day and age that we're looking at here often had 6 attached to them. Who else had 6? Well, Goliath's son over in 2 Samuel 21, verse 20 or so, you can read about it if you like. But one of Goliath's sons, it says there in the scriptures, had 6 fingers and 6 toes. 6 on his hands. Can you imagine? Strange. Why did he have 6, you know, fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each? Because he's another symbolic picture, another meaning. So here we see that this is the guy who's come up against Israel to defy them. And he says, hey, come on out, and I will do you some damage. And if I do, you need to serve me, us, the Philistines, right? Isn't that what the enemy's always doing? Isn't that his game plan? He wants you, me, he wants the whole world to serve him, correct? And so he challenges here and says, if you can send a man, and he says, notice, down to me. Send a man down, if you got one. And the king of Israel at this point, Saul, man's king, the authority of the world, if you would, the authority that the people had chosen for themselves, Saul, the king of the people, their choice, he's as scared as they are. In other words, he's got nothing to offer. He's not going to go down there, is he? What kind of king is Saul? Well, he's not. He's not much of a king at all. He's scared to death. He's not going to go down there, you see. It seems as though when the spirit departed from Saul, so did his courage. He has no courage. He has no way to deal with this challenge. And so what happens, folks? David, the 8th son of Jesse, the 8th son, after 7 sons have been passed over, right? Samuel chose David. 8, the number of new beginnings, the new beginning for Israel, 8. After 7, which is the number of completion, has been done, then the 8th one. In other words, what's being pictured here is so awesome. The king, Saul, who's not really a king at all, but represents anything you might try to deal with the issue of sinfulness and problematic things in your life, that king is no king at all. And what happens here is amazing to me, because here we see Saul says, hey, I don't have any way to deal with this. And so, you know, I don't know what to do. And of course, that's the way it is. There's no way to deal with sin in this world. There's no way for a person to deal with the problem of sin in their life, right? And Goliath knows it. He says, hey, send someone down if you got one, if you got somebody. So after 7, after the sons of Jesse have completely been used up, in other words, there's no way to use them because they're not the one, then the 8th one, David, is sent. If you notice in the story, Jesse, it says there in verse 12, he's the father of David. Jesse's name means Jehovah is living. And he sends after 7, after completely exhausting the resources of this world, if you would, then there's, you know, one left, the 8th son. And listen, guys, the prophets, the men of God throughout all of Israel's history, throughout all of history, period, the prophets and all the men of God could not deal with the sin issue. And when Israel was completely done, then Jehovah is living, the living God, sent David. David, guys, his name means beloved. Jehovah is living. The living God sent his beloved son, didn't he? We know that. Matthew chapter 3, verse 17. It says there, when Jesus came up out of the water, when John baptized him, a voice came from heaven saying, "This is my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased. I've sent him." And it says here that Jesse takes David, his beloved son, you see. And verse 17 says, and he says, "Son, take now and go see how your brethren are doing. Go see how your brothers are faring. They've been out there now for 40 days. 40 is the number of days that Goliath kept coming out. Remember, it says? For 40 days he came out and taunted. 40, guys, whenever you see 40 in the scriptures and you read the story associated with it, understand it's the number of testing. Right? Jesus was in the wilderness for how many days? 40. Moses was on Mount Sinai how many days? 40. Goliath comes out on that battlefield for 40 days. It's a time of testing for Israel. And here's the result of that test. Saul has failed. Do you think if it would have gone on 42 days that Saul would have marched out there finally? No. Nope. He wasn't getting braver day by day. He was getting more cowardice day by day. So was everybody else. So here's the thing. After 40 days of testing, Jesse sends his son and says, "I want you to go see how your brethren are doing." And watch what he says. Verse 17, "Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and 10 loaves and run to the camp to thy brethren and carry these 10 cheeses, you see, unto the captain of their 1,000 and look how thy brethren fare and take their pledge." In other words, go find out how they're doing. Well, how are they doing? They're doing terrible, right? If you were there in the army of Israel and someone came up to you after 40 days of this kind of thing going on and they said, "How you doing?" What would you say? "We're doing terrible. He keeps coming out. He comes out every day. Look at him. Look at him. He's a monster. Nobody's going to fight him. We're stuck. We're doomed. We don't have a future. We don't have any hope. We don't have anything to look forward to. We're going to have to serve the Philistines, it looks like." That's how they were doing. Notice that David is to take 10 loaves and 10 cheeses. Now, 10 is always associated with the law, folks. Number 10, 10 commandments. He's going to take that with him. Why? Because he's going to disperse it to the brethren. Jesus was the fulfillment of the law when he came. Now, watch what happens here. He says, "Go find out how they're doing." And, of course, we know how they're doing. "And Saul and they that are of the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines," verse 19 says. "And David," verse 20, "rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array." So David comes, and there they are, standing there again. And again in verse 24, "All the men of Israel, when they saw the man come out," when Goliath comes out, "they fled from him and were sore afraid." When Jesus came to this earth, folks, Satan was wreaking havoc on the people of God. Do you understand that? You know that prior to Jesus coming on the scene, when his birth took place and his life of ministry began, prior to that, for 400 years, God had not spoken one word to anyone in Israel. There's no recorded message from the Lord, no recorded ministries taking place that were of the Lord. It was a dead religious system, and Satan was having a field day on this earth. And Jesus showed up, like David shows up, and the men were afraid and they're scared to death. And the men are saying, man, have you seen this guy? He's defying Israel, you see. And it shall be that if any man can deal with him, he will get great riches, he will get a bride, and he will set the father's people free. That's exactly what they told David. Hey, the guy who takes him out, you'll be enriched for sure. Your life will be enriched, but also you get a bride. And you also will set your father's house free. King will enrich you, give you his daughter to marry, and he'll make his father's house free in Israel. Wow. Now, who's going to be able to pull that off? No one in Israel, no one in the army, no man that was there would even have thought about it, much less been able to go do it. And it's an amazing thing. But watch what happens. David speaks then to them standing by, and he says, so, the guy who takes this one out gets all this, and it's all an agreement. Everybody agrees that it's right, it's fair. Yep, it is, you see. Now, isn't it interesting that as he's speaking with the people, as he's sharing with the people, and his heart is already, as the people are aware of, his heart is already telling them that I'm going to do this. I'm going to take care of this giant. I'm going to handle it for you. He's already making that known to them. And while he does, his older brother, Eliab, the oldest brother, says, what are you doing here? Why did you come down here? I know what you're thinking. I know what you're up to. Now, isn't it interesting when Jesus came and was sharing with the people that he was here for a purpose to deliver them out of the hand of the enemy, out of the bondage of sin, to pay for the sins of the world, he was sharing that with them, that the older brother, so to speak, the Pharisees, the leadership of Israel, came to him constantly and said, what are you doing here? Who do you think you are coming down here and telling the people this kind of thing? They didn't receive him. They totally turned on him. By the way, folks, whenever you step out in faith, whenever someone like David steps out in faith, when you do that, don't be shocked when somebody opposes you, even somebody in your own family. When faith is exercised, I find that that is a dividing line for a lot of people. And so many times people will say, hey, I don't know what you think you're trying to do, but it's not going to work. You know, have you ever tried to move out in something saying, hey, I think we're just going to exercise some faith here, and then immediately someone says, you're crazy. You really think that's going to work? That's nutty, right? Sometimes it's in your own family that it happens. Hey, I really want to seek this ministry out and do this. What? You can't do that. You're not a minister. You don't wear a collar. You can't do that. You don't even look like a preacher. Look at the clothes you're wearing. Whatever it might be. You're not equipped. You don't have it together. You can't do it. There's no way. That's what's happening here. The older brother overhears David speaking about going and taking care of this, and he gets mad and he gets bitter towards him. I know what you're thinking. You came down here to see the fight. Well, go home. Leave the fighting to us men. Yeah. Yeah, like you're going to go out there. You've had 40 days. To think about it. Your time's up, big brother. Remember what Jesus told the leadership of the Jews when he was here? You guys are hypocrites. You put burdens on the people. You don't lift a finger to help them. You're not about ready to take on the enemy. You're scared to death of him. And really, folks, in that culture Jesus was dealing with, the enemy had ran herd on the leadership of the Jews. They were so involved with corruption. Remember, Jesus had to go into the temple and drive them out of there because they were ripping people off. And so David, watch this. Verse 30, he turns from his older brother and speaks to another. The older brother, the Jews, if you would. What happened when Jesus was here? Oh, he died for the sins of the world. But what happened there after the Jews rejected him? He turned to another. The Gentiles, you and me, were brought in because of the rejection of the older brother, if you would. So we see that David turns away from his brother and starts speaking to another that's there. What a picture. As that took place, and we were included because he turned to others and started speaking to them. And verse 31, when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul. And so Saul sends for him. And David comes before Saul then and says to him, don't let any man's heart fail because of him, that is Goliath. Thy servant will go and fight with the Philistine. So Jesus comes and telling, really in effect, speaking to this leader that's supposed to be the king of the world, if you would, who can't do a thing to help the people. Jesus says, I'll take care of it. The people don't need to fear. Not because you're going to do anything, Saul, but because I'll go take care of it. Now, Saul says to David, he says, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he's a man of war from his youth. Saul says, you can't go do this. You're not able. You're not going to be able to defeat him. Now, in human perspective, in rationale that is probably shared by most people, Saul is correct, isn't he? But he's looking at the outward appearance of David, and then he's looking at Goliath. But Saul makes a fatal mistake here when he omits God from the equation. He's not looking at the Lord at all. And this is another indication of Saul's heart. He has no faith whatsoever. None. And when someone like David says, don't worry, it's going to be taken care of, Saul, with no faith, looks at the appearance of things and says, there's no way. Have you ever done that? Looked at the appearance of, hey, this looks bad. You know, you're just a runt. He's a giant. There's no way in the world this is going to happen. Thanks for trying. Thanks for stepping up. But there's no way. That is the cause, folks, of so much of the church's downfall. I can't even begin to express how often this happens. Because people look at the outward appearance of what is going on, or they start adding up the equation and they say, no, it can't happen because outwardly it doesn't look like it can. It can't work. Do the math. He weighs probably 650 to 700 pounds. You might weigh 150 if you're all wet. It's not going to happen. You know, his spear weighs probably almost what you do. Forget about it. So, David explains to him, hey, I've run into this kind of thing before with the lion and the bear, and it was no problem. And he points out the reason. Because, he says, verse 37, the Lord delivered me out of the hand of the lion and the bear. And this Philistine's no different than they are. If he's able to deliver me out of that, then he's able to deliver me from anything. And folks, do you know that's true? Have you experienced anything in your life that the Lord has taken care of for you? Anything? I have. That I know it was the Lord's deliverance. It was his awesome, amazing power that got me through that. Has that ever happened to you? And David saying here, hey, all I know is that the Lord did it before. He can do it again. I don't have a problem with this giant, you see. He's just like the lion and the bear. He's just a big oaf. And he's defying God with his mouth, you see. And so the armor that Saul tries to place on David is similar, isn't it, to the people that always came at Jesus trying to get him to do the things that they were doing, their methods. And Saul here is a worldly king, and he's trying to get David to do it in a worldly way. But it doesn't fit. The armor doesn't fit David. It's not the same as it fits Saul. It fits Saul perfectly, sadly to say. The worldly methods was the way he operated. But David says, I don't operate that way. It's not the world's way, you see. And so he takes and puts that stuff off. He disrobes that stuff. And he takes what he always has on him, and that is the shepherd's gear. He's a shepherd. So he uses the weapons of the shepherd and the tools of the shepherd. He chose him his staff, and his hand dipped down into the brook and took 5 smooth stones out of the brook. 5 is, of course, the number of grace. But it's often been disputed as to why David took 5 stones. Was it just to give us a picture of grace? Or was there another meaning for David to have 5 stones? Well, if you continue reading the stories, you'll find out there's a couple of things that could possibly be reasoning for David. Goliath, as it turns out, had 4 brothers. So perhaps David was saying, I got you and your 4 brothers right here in my bag. So bring it on. I got you, Goliath, and anything else that you're associated with handled in this. That's a possibility. People say, well, maybe he took 5 because he thought he was going to miss. If you understand how shepherds operated in those days, you'd be amazed at what a shepherd could do with a sling. They were known for their accuracy with a sling. It wasn't a slingshot like we have that you pull back and let fire. It was a little leather pouch that you'd stick a stone in, and they would swing it like this and then let it go at the right time. And a shepherd could take John's glasses up there in the sound booth and knock them right off his head. They were extremely, extremely accurate with a sling. So David wasn't worried about that. I think probably David was saying, if there's any other Philistines that come after you, I'm prepared. In other words, this thing's going to be finished today. It's going to be finished. God uses different tools, folks, than the world does. Don't try and use the world's tools. Don't try and do things the worldly way when you know that God has already established what you're supposed to do. Use what God gives you. The simplicity of the word, worship, prayer, fellowship, communion. It's the Acts 2:42 model that we so commonly refer to. And, you know, people say, is that all you guys do there? I mean, what else do you guys do? Nothing. Well, how does your church even operate? I don't know. We teach the word, we pray, we worship, we have communion and fellowship, and we kind of, you know, that's all we really have time to do, you know. Well, what about committees? What about programs? Well, we don't really have time for that. And, you know, guys, the pressure to do something, to do something else, or do something different, or do something more, whatever, it's constantly there because the church has been affected by that pressure. And so often that's going on. But let me tell you, if something is going on in a church that takes away from the word, worship, prayer, fellowship, communion, anything that would detract from that, in my opinion, doesn't belong. I mean, you can go do that somewhere else. But this church and the church as a whole, I believe, ought to be operating with those parameters. Why? Because that is what brings the reality and the power to a life. Doing activities and all the rest can be fun, I guess, but it doesn't do much for your walk with the Lord. So use the weapons that the Lord gives. Now, here's the thing. David approaches the Philistine, obviously, without him noticing him for a little while. It seems as though little David, you know, kind of made his way across the brook and into the area of the valley there where Goliath was before Goliath even notices him. And he looks up and sees him and is disdained or bitter. And he says, "Hey, am I a dog?" And you can kind of see David kind of smirking. "Yeah, you're going to die like a dog today. That's going to be the end of it for you. Just like the bear did and just like the lion did. You're defying God and you're going to die." The Bible, from the earliest point, has declared that that would be so. When Eve was tempted by the serpent in the garden, God declared, there's always going to be enmity between the serpent and this woman, so to speak. But the seed of the woman is going to crush the head of the serpent. He'll bruise his heel in the process, but Satan's head will be crushed. And of course, we understand that Jesus was bruised. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was put to death on the cross, but he rose again. And in the process, folks, he destroys the enemy. He destroys the power of Satan. And watch what happens here. David says to Goliath, "You came to me with a sword," verse 45, "and with a spear and a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord God of hosts, of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. And this day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thy head from thee. And I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day into the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." And folks, I'll tell you something. David has zero fear here. Have you picked that up yet? And we know that that's true. Why? Because when Goliath starts making his steps towards David, David literally runs towards him. Everybody else is running the other way. David runs at Goliath head on, runs right at him. Because, listen, if you are truly fighting in the name of the Lord, you have no need to fear. If you're fighting in your own name or in your own strength, you have a great deal to fear. You should be afraid. I should be afraid. But if I'm fighting in the name of the Lord, if this is a spiritual battle and I understand that, and I understand that, hey, I can go into this situation not only timidly, but run into it, because I know that the Lord is going to deliver in this situation, I have no fear about that. The reason David's not afraid is because he's confident in the Lord, not in himself. He's a runt. And some of you might say, "I'm a runt spiritually. I'm a midget when it comes to spiritual things." Maybe. So was David was a little guy, just a little guy. And he ran right in there. Why? Because God was with him. And God is with you and with me. And you don't need to fear the giants of this world, so to speak, the spiritual giants that are out there on the other side. And David says the reason, you see, that this is going to be so is that, verse 47, that the people, the assembly, will know that the Lord, you see, is real. And that he is the one that's going to give you into my hands. It's all about the Lord. It's for him, you see. And so David runs, it says, verse 48, towards the enemy there, just like Jesus did in Jerusalem, remember? The Bible tells us he set his face like flint towards Jerusalem when it was time to go to the cross. He did not waver. Oh, his disciples and others perhaps said, don't do it, you know, don't go, don't do this. And Jesus set his face like flint and ran towards the enemy, determined. You couldn't have stopped Jesus. I mean, you couldn't have persuaded him to put it off. Or he was ready. He was determined. Same thing with David. You wouldn't have been able to stop him. If somebody from the army of Israel behind him, you know, standing back there, if they would have called out, David, don't do it. If his big brother, Eliab, you know, would have said, I didn't mean it. Don't go. You wouldn't have stopped David with that. He was determined to do it, you see. And David, when he puts his hand in his bag, he takes a stone. Listen, he takes a stone and takes that stone and hurls it at Goliath. And he sinks that rock into his forehead. Ouch. I mean, can you imagine getting hit by, I mean, have you ever gotten hit by a rock? When I was a kid, I used to walk home from school down in Inglewood, California. And there's this kid named Johnny. And he was one of those kids in school, you know. He was always in trouble. And we got to this one place on this block where there was a tree in front of this house and then another tree on the other side of the lawn, you know. And of course, in my neighborhood, we had some, the street, the curb, and then there was a section there that you could plant stuff, and then the sidewalk, and then people's lawns. And so these trees were in that first little section by the street. But around the base of these trees, they had filled the ring around the trees with these rocks, these white rocks, decorative rocks, I guess, but rocks nonetheless. And we got close to that house, and this Johnny, you know, runs up to the first tree, you know, on the far tree, and hides behind and starts hurling these rocks at me, you know. And my first instinct is to duck behind the other tree, you know. I'm like, okay, knock it off, you know. Quit throwing the rocks, you know, let's not do this, you know. Of course, I didn't say it that way, you know. It was probably more like, stop it, Johnny, you know. And he wouldn't stop. You know, he just kept, you know, throwing and laughing, ha, ha, ha. So I said, okay. And I grabbed one of those rocks, and I just chucked it, you know, towards the tree, thinking, you know. And he just happened to pop his head out. Just at the, I mean, it was perfect timing. And he just popped out, and bam. That rock nailed him right between the eyes, and he fell back and was crying, and I'm telling my mom. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, not. And he ran home. But the point is, have you ever got hit by a rock? It doesn't feel good. But can you imagine getting nailed by a rock so hard that it gets sunken into your head? Wow. And it hit Goliath. This stone, he grabs a stone. Now, guys, understand this. David has seen the victory already. What's happening now, the rock embedded in Goliath's head is only the reality of what David already knew was going to happen. And he spoke it beforehand. He said, you're going down. And the word of God declared before Jesus ever showed up that this was going to happen. And that's why when he came, it wasn't a question of if this is going to happen. It's going to happen. And do you understand what the word of God declares to you and me? The promises, the power, the reality of what God says he can do, will do. He will provide. He will be your God. He will supply power to overcome. He will do all kinds of amazing things for you. Do you understand that? Do you see it? Will you say it? David saw it, he said it, and he did it. Because he believed that he could do so. Why? Because God was on his side, and this guy is defying God. This big giant guy is defying the God of Israel. And what is he compared to God? But here's the problem. If you believe you're going to lose, you'll lose. If you think about overcoming this sin or that problem or this addiction or that deal or whatever it might be, and you start thinking, and you act like Saul and the rest of his men, it can't happen, you know. And whenever that issue comes at you, you, oh no, it's giant, and you run the other way like they were, then nothing is going to happen, and it's just going to be like a standoff with nothing taking place. How many Christians are living their life year after year, 40 days, 40 years maybe, where there's nothing happening spiritually? It's just a standoff. Oh, I wanted to go there, or I wanted to do this, or I wanted to overcome the other thing, but, you know, just can't. You haven't seen it, you haven't said it, and you haven't done it. And you don't believe it, and it won't be unless you believe it. You've got to say like David, hey, you're going down, Goliath, whatever Goliath is in your life. You're going down. It's over. And I'm going to run towards you. I'm not running away from you. I'm running towards you, and you're coming down. With what? With the stone. The stone, folks. The stone. Faith, you see, is in the stone. The rock. Luke chapter 20, around verse 18. The stone. Jesus said, any man who falls upon this stone will be broken. But any man with which this stone falls upon will be crushed into powder. So here's the thing. David takes a stone and hurls it at the giant, and that stone fell upon him and crushed him to powder because he was defying God. Now, what Jesus meant by that, if you fall on him, if you fall on Christ, if you fall down on him, you will be broken, but he'll put you back together. But if he has to fall on you, you'll be crushed. Goliath was making it very clear, as Satan did and as so many in the world do, that I am not submitting to the Lord. I am in defiance to the Lord, and that's that, and I'm not going to change. Well, then the rock will fall on you, will fall on them, and they'll be crushed, destroyed. If I'm willing to fall on the rock, if I'm willing to fall down before the Lord, I will be broken. It will break me apart. Do you know that's so? When you fall down before the Lord, it's a breaking experience, isn't it? Man, I'm broken. My heart breaks before you, Lord. I'm so disgusted with sin. I'm so tired of this issue. I'm so tired of dealing with that. I want the power to overcome this. It'll break me, but it'll crush him. And so the stone was hurled. And how fast David prevailed. Can you see the scene? It's like over before it starts. Can you imagine the Philistine stand back there going, look at that little pit squeak. There he is. Look at him. What's that in his hand? Ooh, he's got a sling. Right? And David runs out there, which would have taken a few seconds, runs out there, hurling this sling in the air, and wham, boom, boom, it's over. Some people are back at camp. Some people are on the battlefield. And what they're experiencing is, once I get out on the battlefield and I understand that God's going to take this thing and do it and destroy the enemy in this, they are out there experiencing victory, 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 while the rest of the camp, so to speak, is back there going, how's he doing that? Can you imagine the army of Israel going, what? As Goliath, you know, this thing was over so fast, it was probably shocking to people. Have you ever let the Lord really do something in your life? Oh, you're wrestling with it. Man, Lord, is this ever going to end? Is this ever going to be over? Is this ever going to stop? Is it ever? And you finally cave in. You finally break. You finally call out. You finally cry out. It's all over in a matter of moments, oftentimes, isn't it? It's done. Remember the disciples in the boat? The storm came up. They're crying and screaming. Remember? Jesus gets up, calms the storm. And it says immediately they were on the other side. When Jesus moves, he moves with power and immediacy, swiftness. It was over before it even started. And therefore, you see, verse 51, David ran and stood upon the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head. Totally destroyed him. Took the power away. He beheaded the enemy. And guys, do you understand? This is so. This is true today. Now, what good was Goliath after that? Not much. Right? And what happened to the Philistines? Well, when they saw, verse 51, when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. They started running away. And then what? The men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines. It's amazing how quickly their attitude changed, isn't it? For 40 days, they've been crying the blues, you know. This big giant, you know, man, he's bad news, and we're never going to be able to win. We're never going to be able to get out of this. And little David runs out there, boom, done, over. Yeah, let's get him. But I want to point out something to you. It says the men of Israel and of Judah pursued the Philistines until they'll come to the valley and to the gates of Ekron. Interesting. The enemy's defeated, really, isn't he? The big guy, the head guy is done. He's down. He's out. He's defeated. So what's left to do? What's left? Chase the enemy down. Where? Well, they chased him to the gates. Jesus said, this church, the power that's going to be available to this church after the enemy's defeated, when did that happen? On the cross. Jesus laid his life down. In the process, he defeats Satan completely. The Bible tells us that he has totally been taken out of commission. He's like a roaring lion, but he doesn't have any teeth or fangs or any claws. All he can do is roar, but he can't do anything. He's been taken out of commission. And so Jesus said, hey, the power that this church is going to have is powerful enough to storm the gates of hell. Just like they started chasing the enemy back all the way to the gates. There's nothing left to do, folks. Listen carefully. There's nothing left for you and me to do but this. When the enemy is on the move, on the scene, you chase him down and wipe him out. Well, how do we do that? Well, first thing you do is you quit running from him. You have to quit running from him. But he chases me everywhere. He can only chase you if you run. As soon as you stop running, one thing, one problem is going to be solved. What's that? You're going to have to confront him. For some, the big issue is to stop running so that the confrontation can take place. Well, I'm not confrontive, people say. You ever know people like that? Well, I'm just non-confrontational. Well, then you're going to be a weak Christian. You need to be confrontational in this sense. When the enemy is at your door, when he's in your face, when he's in your family, when he's at your work, when he's involved with you, trying to pull you down, trying to keep you in exile, trying to pull you apart, trying to rip your life to shreds. You don't run from him when that happens. You stop and say, that's enough. No more running. And he'll stop very abruptly. Watch and see. And when you do what David did, and you say, you are defying the true and living God, and by his power, I'm going to run you down. He will take off. He will. The Bible says, you resist him, and he will flee from you. You resist the devil, and he will flee. You just say, that's enough. No more running. What? You're not going to run? Bleh. Doesn't that scare you? Wee. Doesn't that freak you out? No. No more running. No more fear of you. You are done. And by the power of God, by the blood of Jesus Christ, I'm coming after you. And then watch what he does. Oh, no. This isn't working. That's right. It's not working. And you go after and watch and see what happens. He runs from your life. He runs from that situation. Because you have the Lord. Do you see it? Do you believe it? Will you say it? Don't just say it to somebody. Say it to him when he comes. Just like David did. Just like you're defying God and you're going down. Now. Right now. Today. What an amazing thing it would be if Christians would do that. What an awesome thing it would be if Christians would say, that's enough. I don't believe I'm going to lose anymore. Don't believe that's going to happen again. I believe he's going to take victory here. And I'm going to get on the rock. And that rock is going to crush the enemy. And I'm done. Now, from now on, what's left in life? Just chase him around. Chase him out of there. Chase him out of there. I'm going to chase it out of my neighbor's house, too. I'm going to chase him out of the schools. That's right. I'm going to chase him out of my kid's life. I'm going to chase him out. I'm going to chase him all over the place because the Lord has given the power and ability to do that. And listen, the commission, the instruction to do so. You and me can take territory, folks, if we desire to do so by the power of God. It's been given to us in his word. Believe it. See it. Say it. Do it. In Jesus' name.